Around Comics, Episode 56. Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the co-host of Around Comics, Brian Salazar.
I'm back, baby!
I don't know. From our week off.
Yeah, I'm rested and ready to offend people.
All right. Speaking of offending people, the other co-host of Around Comics and the straw that stirs the drink, Mr. Tom Caters.
Do you know who I have a problem with?
Babies?
Everyone. Babies inside of me. Yep.
Nice, Tom. And our guest this week is Around Comics regular and the host of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
I am the Pete Best of Around Comics.
Sir, how you doing?
I'm good.
Who would
Thank
be
you.
The Ringo Starr then? Because that presupposes at some point we're going to bring someone else in.
Well, yeah, I think this is just a temporary chair. I think
Bendis.
Exactly.
We're grooming John Byrne.
There you go. I would definitely give up my seat for John Byrne.
All right. This episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
New from InStockTrades.com, Green Lantern, Revenge of the Green Lanterns, hardcover by Jeff Johns, Carlos Pacheco, Ethan Van Sciver, and Ivan Reyes. The regular price is $19.99, but InStock Trades has it for 35% off at just $12.99. Saves $15 on From Hell hardcover by Alan Moore and Eddie Campbell. It's 30% off. Ex Machina Volume 4, March to War, trade paperback by Brian K. Vaughan and Tony Harris. And Punisher Max Volume 6, Barracuda, trade paperback by Garth Ennis and Goran Parlov. It's also 35% off at only $10.39. Save up to 35% off on all trade paperbacks and hardcovers. And as always, shipping is free on orders of $50 or more. Buy your favorites now at InStockTrades.com.
It's not hard to get $50 worth of trades.
Oh, very easy.
Yeah, no,
very
hell no.
Easy.
And actually, I'll be talking about part of my InStockTrades.com order a little bit later in the show. I've been stocking up on essentials and showcases.
Teaser.
And all sorts of stuff.
And yet, every day I have to buy him lunch.
Interesting.
Mm, isn't that interesting? I don't know how that works.
It's connected.
I just imagine you and Chris like in an alleyway sharing like half an Italian beef like sandwich.
While we're reading the last Hawaiian Dick trade.
Yeah, I can't believe I spent all this money on that.
The other day he's like, I'm like, hey, I'm going to Portillo's. You want anything? He's like, yeah, give me a double cheeseburger. Here's $5. I'm like, dude,
yeah,
$5.
What's the other $2 for the burger? Exactly.
Hey, look at the new Absolute Hush that I just got in the mail.
Yeah,
look at this. How about Amazon. Two copies? One will remain shrink-wrapped.
All right. Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. When you're here, remember to ask about Dark Tower's Pull List membership. It's one of the best you'll find anywhere. Dark Tower has a great selection of mainstream comics, independent comics, and trades, as well as statues and action figures. Come to Dark Tower for all of your comics and collectible needs. And as a footnote, congratulations to Mark Beatty, the new owner of Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles.
Yay!
Congratulations.
That's right.
Most small businesses fail after
within the first year. I think it's like 65%.
There you go.
Not this one.
We'll keep it
no,
alive.
We are really happy. Chris
buying statues and saying they're for me.
Every time I walk in, there's always several trades that I wish I had a little more money and could walk out with.
I kept the store alive with HeroClix purchases for about a year and a half. All right, guys. We have a new format. You're listening to the new Around Comics.
The first. Absolute. New reboot. Shiny. It's a reboot.
My chair is padded, so it must be
this. Post is episode crisis around comics.
Yes, it is. No more Around Comics 2.
Yeah.
If you are a longtime listener of Around Comics, starting with this episode, you'll notice a significant change in our format. Instead of releasing one large episode on Monday, we'll now be offering two shorter, easier-to-digest episodes a week. On Mondays, you'll be getting all the previous week's top news stories in Wired Wire Comics News, as well as our usual top-of-the-stack reviews and recommendations. That and a few surprises sprinkled in there as well.
Sphinctered in?
Sphinctered in.
Yeah.
Starting this Thursday, each week you'll have a second episode that will either be our normal topic discussion, a Comics 101 segment, or an interview. The listeners have spoken, and we have listened. We hope that the change in the format makes this a better listening experience for everyone.
I was Burt Wheeler. I was Darth Vader 78.
I wrote all the reviews.
Fan of Miss Simone. I figured that was a nice sounding kind.
Well, as always, we want to know what you think, so send us your thoughts at info@aroundcomics.com. And I think it's going to be our hope to keep all of our episodes at right around an hour, so we hope everyone enjoys the change in format.
We want you to like us.
Please.
Are we starting over with episode one, then? Is this a reboot?
Post-crisis. How are we going to fit the old episodes in the continuity of...
of these new
episodes.
Hyper time, baby.
Hyper time.
We're in hyper time.
Zero hour.
It's all hyper time.
We'll blame it on Chuck Austin.
I love Chuck. Yeah, don't do that.
The first 55 issues are all Chuck Austin's fault. All right, guys. The October-November contest, the Exterminators Bug Hunt, it's over.
Someone won.
It's yes.
Over?
Tom, why don't you handle this?
The first place winner, it happens to be someone from the United Kingdom. Mr. Warren Alger.
So you know it's not Ray, because that's going to be such a pain in the ass to mail those.
So here's the thing, or Alger, we're going to hold that until you come to Chicago to pick it up. No, I'll send it to you. So,
and what did Warren win for?
Warren won a signed copy of the first Exterminators Collect Edition, Bug Brothers, as well as a signed script from author Simon Oliver and a one-of-a-kind sketch from series artist Tony Moore.
Very cool.
The second place winner is Christopher Whitfield, mm-hmm. who we don't have a location, but I assume we will get it to you. And you will receive a signed copy of Bug Brothers. Everyone else, you read a really good book, and you should be happy with that, and don't complain.
And thank you for entering.
I was not just overwhelmed by the number of people that entered this, but the fact that every single entry was correct. And believe me, it took me like a minute and a half to check each one of them. Yeah. I spent a couple lunch hours at work.
I want to go on the record of saying right now I think it was rigged because I entered 14 times under various names.
And any of you guys who...
Miss Simone fan, 12,
that was amazing. All you guys who entered it but didn't win, and I'm especially interested in people who entered it who never read Exterminators before, if there's any of you. You know, come on the forum and tell us what you thought of Exterminators.
Yeah.
If you didn't like it, tell us.
Or email us at info@aroundcomics.com.
Tell us
if
you didn't like
know.
It. You know?
Sure.
Of course, if you badmouth it, Tony Moore may have to beat you over the head with his prosthetic leg.
But I'm interested to see, you know, what you guys thought.
All right, guys. One of the things that we have going on the forum, I'm going to mention it this week because we're kicking off December, and that starts our Year of Alan Moore.
Yep. Bum, bum, I already bum. Started. I started so last night.
You had your first Skype
no,
conference?
No. I started reading my old Swamp Thing issues to catch up.
Yep. Yeah, how are you handling, it says Swamp Thing, that's what you're reading. Is it how many trades, any
It's kind of loosely, you know, whatever you feel comfortable. I mean, if you only want to read the first trade or whatever you want to read, we're going to talk
and,
about it.
And
you know.
Sort of how I would like to do it is, for me, I think it would be cool if people who listen to the podcast who want to do this, who don't come to the forum, come to the forum, and if you don't use Skype, maybe sign up for Skype. And I think it would be great if people sort of divided them, got together in like groups of four or five, or mm-hmm. somehow figured it out, because we could do a Skype cast with like 24 people, but I don't think that would be as interesting as having four people talk about mm-hmm. it, because everyone talks over each other. So I think it would be great if you listen to this and you want to participate, come to the forum and let us know.
Yeah, and get into a Skype group and talk. That's what we want to do. This all came about because I'm woefully behind on my reading of Alan Moore.
You bring the mustard, and we got the ketchup.
You got it. And one of our listeners proposed the idea of an Alan Moore book club, and that's what this is. So I'm gonna run it down real quick. December is Swamp Thing. Read as much Swamp Thing as you want or as you can, and we'll be talking about it all throughout the month of December. And I'll just go up to March right now. January is Watchmen and The Complete Ballad of Halo Jones. February will be V for Vendetta and Skiz. I hear that Skiz and Halo Jones can work really well together back to back. And then March is going to be dedicated to From Hell, which there's the new hardcover, which you heard at the beginning. In stock trades, you can get it for $35.
Softcover, isn't it?
No.
There's a new hardcover. There's a new softcover, but there's a brand new hardcover for $35.
From Top Shelf?
I believe so.
I love Top Shelf. I just bought the softcover.
So that'll take you up through March, and then we're gonna have all. You can go to the forum, look at the thread. Yeah, it's a sticky on the forum. So we're gonna be reading a lot of Alan Moore this year. So have fun with that. Which leads me into not just InStockTrades.com, but ShoppingAroundComics.com.
Shopping Around Comics, you can buy all your Alan Moore books. We have an actual section in the Amazon store that has all these books and others separated. I believe I've got them pretty much
chronologically.
And so you can go in there, and if you're going to order the trades and stuff, go in there and order them from our shop.
And if you have something you want to buy that isn't necessarily in the shop, let us know.
Yeah.
We can put it in there.
Absolutely.
So if you're getting some Alan Moore stuff and you want to pick something else up, you know, we can add it in there. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Send us an email or post it on the forum, whatever. And speaking of the website, Sal, you debuted the new Around Comics.
I launched the new website today.
To coincide with the new Around Comics.
I saw it. It looked very nice. I thought it turned out.
Well, that was one of the things I really wanted to work on because the initial site I had sort of cobbled together. I built the templates for it through a bunch of different things, trying to put it together. And while it worked,
it was the chitty chitty bang bang.
Yeah, it did everything I wanted it to do, but it didn't work real well. So I went back and worked with a really highly optimized template this time, and it should work.
It looks really good. It works really fast.
Great job. So that's all Sal. So
very good.
Kudos to you, sir. All right, that'll take care of our opening announcements here. And instead of our regular topic discussion, I'm going to have to get used to this. It's time for Wire to Wire Comic News. And Wire to Wire Comic News is sponsored by the New York Comic Con.
The New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd through 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guests of honor include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show and advance ticket information, visit nycomiccon.com. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. We'll be there. Yes. It's going to be a great time.
Yes. Getting closer. We've got to get our points in order.
You can buy Chris a sandwich.
Get together. Yeah, instead of me having to do it, somebody else can buy Chris a sandwich.
$10 for a chicken salad sandwich? Not me.
Not me. It's $5.
All right, another change to the news. We're going to be doing live reads, so I guess I will start us off with our first news story, and that is The Last Christmas is in the Amazon Top 10. 'Tis the season for Holly Jolly and Top 10 lists, and The Last Christmas serves all of them up right. The hit graphic novel by Brian Potion, Gerard Dugan, and Rick Remender has been named to Amazon's Top 10 list of editor's picks for 2006 Best Comics and Graphic Novels. On that list, they are joined by comic book legends like Tony Millionaire and Alan Moore, with covers by Jeff Darrow, Karen Dwyer, and Tony Moore, and topped off by an introduction by comedian Patton Oswalt. Now, The Last Christmas trade paperback is done rocking the editors at Amazon.com. It's headed your way. Look for it in stores November 29th, which was last week, and it's right up there on the shelf. There it is.
It's a really fun story. I really enjoyed it.
He was on Posehn.
Yeah,
he was on Conan, the other night, pushing it pretty good. I thought that was
Love it. Love it.
It's a really, really funny story.
Yeah.
If you want to see Santa Claus shoving the butt of a gun through a zombie's head. This is your book.
And who doesn't want to really see that? That and Tim Seeley's Jesus Against Vampires books.
Loaded
are like,
Bible.
And Loaded, yeah, Bible. Loaded Bible and Last Christmas is like my kind of comic book Christmas.
Really funny. If you want to get some really good Han Solo Tauntaun stuffing Luke inside of it jokes, this is one of the best.
Battle Pulp probably fits in that.
Sure. Yeah. Why not? I like that. That's your really is your holy comic trinity right there.
Yeah. Loaded Bible, Battle Pope, and Last Christmas. Merry Christmas, Mom.
And Jesus.
If you know someone who likes, it's a perfect Christmas gift for someone who has a fantastic
sense. Who's twisted.
Yeah. Who in a good way. Might be someone who is unemployed or might have been spending
why are you looking at me when you say that?
Some time in jail. No, I'm kidding. Someone who's twisted a bit.
Look what I got for Christmas.
our next story is
you have to stop laughing now.
Yeah, the next story is a sad one. Dave Cockrum passed away this last week. Legendary comic book artist Dave Cockrum passed away Sunday, November 25th, due to complications from diabetes. He was 63. Dave's many creations, including some of the X-Men's staple characters, brought tremendous joy to his legion of fans. For three decades, he was a beloved fixture at comic conventions across the country, where he would sketch for a pittance and encourage would-be creators. And farewell to a legend in the industry who, I think, and we've talked about this a bunch of times, Chris, that I don't know if Dave always got the due that he maybe deserved from X-Men's, you know, especially.
He was at the tail end, I think, of the era when creators weren't really getting paid probably what they were worth, or certainly point where he didn't get to see, you know, a lot of royalties, even though I think that Marvel did try and make up for some of that later on
stuff like X-Men, you know, Nightcrawler doesn't exist except for Dave Cockrum.
Well, right.
You look at Legion of Superheroes.
Thank you.
Those characters are not designed the way they are if Dave Cockrum doesn't have his influence.
No, he can't. Yeah. He really brought the Legion to the next level and then did the same thing with the X-Men. Yeah. And you can't deny him his place in the Bronze Age for doing some very important things for both companies, for the top two companies.
Yeah. Yeah. The reboot of X-Men, you know, starting with Giant Size, it's Dave Cockrum, Chris Claremont. And those guys are linked to those characters, you know, even before Byrne and then, you know.
Well, don't forget Len Wein, too, obviously.
Oh, Len Wein, sure.
Yep.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think you're right. And
that's why we have you around, John, is the cast.
No, and it's funny because I thought it was a play on words when you said that he brought joy to his legion of fans, because a lot of the Nightcrawler being one of them, a lot of concepts that he had set for.
Were supposed to be for.
Yeah, for the Legion. Legion. Yeah, he just, because he didn't get some original art back, took it, kept it in his pocket, and then when he went to Marvel and said, "Hey, look, new X-Men."
And you can actually see some of the those sketches and stuff in the X-Men Omnibus.
Yeah. Sure. Yes.
They show some of that stuff, so which is really fascinating.
It's sad, and definitely the comics world has lost a giant that really formed the way that a lot of comic fans look at comics and a lot of characters that are, you know, still around today and still very prominent.
But also take this as an opportunity to enjoy his work.
Absolutely.
They said he did a tremendous amount of great things. DC announces Minx. The New York Times reported that DC Comics has a new imprint entitled Minx, targeted at female readers who may not be attracted to superheroes or manga, but whom have interest in the medium of comic books. Minx launches in May. "It's time we got teenage girls reading comics," said Karen Berger, a senior vice president at DC Comics, told the Times. Lest some fans worry that this simply means more romance comics, Berger asserted that the comics are about more than going out with the cute guy. This line of books gives them something to read about that honors their intelligence and assertiveness and their individuality. The announced lineup of books include Clubbing by Andy Watson and Josh Howard, Regifters by Mike Carey, who I love, Mark Hempel, and Sonny Liu, Good as Lily by Derek Kirk Kim and Jesse Hamm, The Plain Janes by Cecil Castellucci and Jim Rugg.
There you go.
Andy Watson is awesome, too.
Yeah.
Love Bites.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, he even did that Namor series that was so very briefly with Bill Gemmis, and I think he's a great writer. I love Vertigo. I think this is a great thing. I kind of laugh at Karen Berger's quote that it's time to get teenage girls reading comics.
They already are.
Yeah, it's called manga.
Yeah.
And but I think it's great, and I wish Vertigo well, and I hope this works. They have talented people doing this, and it would be nice to see, you know, teenage girls reading
American
traditional
comics.
Well, yeah, yeah. American comics. Well, American, damn right.
Damn it.
Damn right.
You don't need to read them foreign comics.
It doesn't say necessarily in the story they just read, but are these month-to-month issues, or are they original graphic novels?
They're OGNs. They're original
graphic
novels. They
come out staggered, one a month or one every 2 months. For
well, that I don't know as far as the scheduling. I would hope so, and I would think so.
I know any, any Dead at 17 fans here?
Sure.
That's Josh Howard.
Absolutely. So, no, you know, it's
well, I know one of the things that, and, you know, one, I think the only negative that came out of this was that people were complaining that there, you know, in the initial lineup, there aren't any female creators
you notice
on the books. And that is a little strange considering, you know, especially you would think.
Gail Simone's too busy writing
Big
Boy
books.
They got
Gail
writing a lot of stuff. That's true. That's
well, and then she's certainly not the only person that could write it, but actually, I'm hard pressed. The woman who writes Hellblazer currently. I mean, that's the thing. So I would say that while there aren't women writing these women's books, there are a lot of women writing men's books.
Well,
and I think
you know,
Gail
here's the
and
thing.
Well, I don't know. That's
how do you think
lot.
Well, but
there's
I'm but
more
than
there has. But how do you think you're ever going to get women to write these? It's going to be through stuff like this to get kids, get
reading
young
and
women interested.
I'm just saying.
No,
I know a lot of people had sort of criticized that. Yeah, it's just
oh, no, it's you.
You're the only one I heard that from.
Exactly. No, I. The proud news rings out from the hallowed halls of the House of Ideas. Marvel Comics, gentlemen, if you enjoy the current Eternals miniseries, they're extending the run with a seventh issue.
Yay.
It's set to hit comics in February. Eternals is a reimagining of Jack Kirby's classic saga. It goes from a six-issue limited series to seven by expanding to include a fuller, even more exciting conclusion. Writer Neil Gaiman and artist John Romita Jr. lent their creativity loose and allow the story more room to play out and come to a boil. Editor Nick Lowe, pleased with the reaction to the miniseries, was more than glad to be able to go to seven issues.
When he was wrapping up issue number five, Neil decided there was just too much story to be fit into the planned issues. So rather than try to squeeze, we wanted to give the story its proper room, hence the seventh issue. This will be a continuation of the story, he added. And will, as all last issues should, be an end to the story.
That would be Lenny as Nick Lowe.
Lowe
was also adamant
cruel
to point
to
out,
kind.
This is the final final two issues of the miniseries. The Eternals' place in the Marvel Universe will be solidified.
Are we enjoying the Eternals?
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for the inevitable.
I too am waiting for the trade, I have to admit.
I read every issue and it's fantastic.
That's cool. I mean, no, really I just I like theory. Reading. I like reading.
Oh,
I
absolutely understand that. I mean,
and
it's
it looks little, great.
It's
looks gorgeous.
Fantastic.
Well, how about
I think it's some of Romita Jr.'s best work.
It's tight. Yeah. But how about them realizing that they need to extend this by an issue?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it's kind of interesting that you would like in the middle of the story all of a sudden go, whoa, wait
I don't
a
think
minute.
It's the first time that's happened.
No, I don't think it's the first
lot,
time,
but
a writer like Gaiman that you would think he had that thing plotted out pretty tightly, and then all of a sudden he decides
this is
another issue.
I think they have an advantage. I don't think no one's going to be pissed.
No,
you know,
I don't
that's
think
the
so.
Thing.
Yeah, another issue. Yeah,
I mean, no one's going to be like, oh, I have
is
to
this
buy
a,
another issue.
Is this a bi-monthly series?
Oh, damn it.
Or has it been coming out monthly? I mean, is it
Hey, Mark. Mark, is Eternals coming out monthly, or has that been...
Yeah, it's been pretty on time.
I think I was
been pretty on time every month.
Sure.
That's cool. No, I mean, that's fine. I mean, but I know there have been other stories where it's like, yeah, you know, we need another issue. We really need another issue.
It's a fun story.
It
man.
Always just
it
strikes me kind of strange
story.
From a, you know, a writing perspective that you would, you know, at some point all of a sudden decide.
Neil Gaiman, answer for yourself.
Damn it.
Uh-huh. What's your problem?
All right. According to The Hollywood Reporter, HBO has seen the light and is bringing Preacher to the small screen. The pay cable network is developing a one-hour series based on the popular 1990s Vertigo comic series. Mark Steven Johnson, the writer-director behind comic adaptations Daredevil and the upcoming Ghost Rider, is writing the pilot while Howard
Deutsch
is attached to direct. Preacher, which ran from 1995 to 2000, told the story of a down-and-out Texas preacher possessed by Genesis, a supernatural entity conceived by the unnatural coupling of an angel and a demon. Given immense powers, the preacher teamed with an old girlfriend and a hard-drinking Irish vampire and set out on a journey across America to find God, who apparently had abandoned his duties in heaven, and hold him accountable for his negligence. The series was created by Irish-born writer Garth Ennis and British artist Steve Dillon, who will serve as co-executive producers. And I just want to say that I know people have you know, this is rumor of this has come out a few times over the last few years, and Garth Ennis has always said, oh, no, it's, you know, just rumor, whatever. But Warren Ellis on his board today or yesterday had confirmed that he had talked to
Garth Ennis and Garth had confirmed it, that it is going to happen. So
I think what I'm happy about out of that entire press release?
What?
That you were able to say the word Ennis. And not
I can learn. I too can learn.
I too.
No, it's great. For Preacher fans, I think it's sort of a double-edged sword in this one. In one sense, I think it's great that it's going to be an HBO series because, you know, you couldn't do it anywhere else.
Ain't going to be on ABC.
Yeah. But the guy who did Daredevil and Ghost Rider, wait and see, I guess.
I'd much rather have the guy who wrote
Deadwood doing it. But
well, I understand that, but it is, and I wonder if it's the same production company that did Carnival.
That would be so awesome.
Why wasn't that a Vertigo series, by the way?
Carnival?
Carnival was Vertigo without it actually being Vertigo, but as far as its sensibilities, and that's why I am encouraged that HBO is doing this. And it's funny because I thought of all the Vertigo books that were being fast-tracked for TV, I thought Fables was going to beat it because I know there are some very big guns that are
Yeah, but I think Fables would be... You know, an ongoing network. You could do that network.
but apparently, you know, I know that there's been a lot of television talk, and I was surprised at HBO because then HBO could even take it a step further and really give you Fables the way that you really
could. When are we going to get Exterminators?
Maybe next. So we do a casting call right here for Preacher.
Preacher?
Yeah. Who plays Jesse? Jesse.
God, I don't know.
Yeah, I could. I'd want an unknown to play Jesse. I certainly wouldn't want anybody that's known.
HBO does such a good job.
Actually. I was going to say for Jesse, you could a guy that I don't think he would do TV, but
two words. I don't know Skeet why. Ulrich.
Yeah, no. I was thinking Jude Law for some reason. Yeah, I don't know why.
He's kind of got the look. But
yeah.
I'm tired of Jude Law doing the fake American Southern accents. TV, though. I got to be honest.
I'm not good at that kind of casting thing because I can't remember. Actors.
Perfect thread for the forum. We'll cast Preacher.
Cast it, gentlemen. And ladies.
Yeah, who plays Hair Strucker. It's going to be awesome.
Ernest Borgnine. The dude who's doing Lex Luthor in
Smallville.
Wait, is that just because he's bald?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is it Strucker?
But he might not be really
not
bald.
Not Baron Strucker.
No,
Baron Strucker.
Baron Von Strucker?
No, it's Hair, whatever his name is. I don't know.
I've been reading...
Baron Zemo?
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Reading Twins Cats in America.
Yeah, Hair...
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
Whatever his name is. The bald dude whose head looks like a dick.
I'm hip.
All right. Wizard Entertainment announced several staffing changes, including the addition of several new hires to the publishing and Wizard World tour divisions. Additionally, Wizard announced that editor-in-chief Pat McCollum and Wizard Entertainment have parted ways.
They fired his ass.
Yeah, they let him go. In an effort to grow the company and evolve with our customers, Wizard has made a number of aggressive changes over the past 9 months, said Fred Pierce, president and COO of Wizard Entertainment. We have had a record year for both the publishing division and the Wizard World tours, and these staffing changes will ensure even greater success
that's kinda
in
odd.
2007.
You had record-setting years, so let's fire the guy who's in charge.
Hey, things are going great. You're fired. Throughout 2006, Wizard leadership has been making moves to strengthen the company. In March, a toy industry veteran, Jim Silver, joined the company as publisher, while Wizard's own Rob Felton was promoted to vice president and associate publisher in September. Wizard introduced a new format for its flagship publication, Wizard Magazine, growing it from comic book size to conventional magazine size.
The biggest issue of Wizard ever.
In October, the recently relaunched Wizard Universe.com welcomed a record 2 million visitors. Additionally, the annual Wizard World Tour closed its 10th year in November with record-setting attendance and continuously expanding variety of exhibitors.
Everything's fine.
Exactly. Pay no attention to the changes. All is
Everything's
well.
Everything's fine.
Back to
We're
work.
We're fine. We Look, just right. fired everybody. Don't worry.
You know, I used to work at Sporting News, the Sporting News company.
Sporting News.
Yes.
Radio.
Yes. And you know, the magazine was part of the company, and I was there during the change when Paul Allen bought the company. And we released a similar press release saying, all is fine. Everything is just changing radically.
But don't worry.
But it's because of a need, and I think, you know, it's
well, what
very
are they going to say? We're in the shitter. Things are horrible. Well, we hate what we're doing.
And they're not. They're still a very strong brand name. But obviously, with the advent of the internet, it's and – podcasting as well.
Their website sucks.
Well, that was the thing. It's like their website. You know, they put out this big press release about 3 months ago that said, "Oh, we're relaunching Wizard Universe to have news and all these stuff." And they did, but then like the design of it was fucking awful. It was like, who designed this website? It's horrible. I mean, the content's great. They put a lot of great stuff out there. They have a lot of great creators doing interviews.
Bendis is doing cool
interviews, and there's some really cool stuff on there, but it's like, make it a little more accessible to people,
look at aroundcomics.com. That's the way to do a website.
I think the changes to the magazine have been good, and I think they have to be more feature-oriented, and I think they have to kind of broaden their appeal to include the genre television that everyone is watching, and be more of a pop culture destination rather than just comic books. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Everything's fine.
They're at Spike TV and the International Fighting League and all that.
We have sold more copies ever, and they're bigger. Nothing is wrong.
When they say they're partners with the International Fight League, that's just another division of the company.
Sheamus,
he owns the company, so. Yeah. Whatever, but
that's all smoke and mirrors.
I think that they need to make changes, and I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of changes they make because the media environment has
changed. Long as the top 10 hottest creators are in there, that's all I care about.
The Punisher has made his lethal return to the Marvel Universe amidst Civil War in the premiere issue of Punisher War Journal, an excellent book, by the way.
Yes.
The first issue is sold out at Diamond, and Marvel is rushing back to press with a Civil War style second printing variant cover by Young Guns Reloaded artist Ariel Olivetti.
Yes.
Written by Matt Fraction and the recently dubbed Young Gun Olivetti, although Olivetti's pretty old.
Yeah.
Punisher War Journal finds Frank Castle focusing his war on crime once again on superpowered villains. Stephen G. Saunders of SilverBulletComics.com called the first issue a great book. This is solid Punisher with Matt Fraction treating the character of Frank Castle with the love and respect he deserves. Well, that's nice, Steve. Good for you. Obviously, I think the success speaks for itself. It's a book that everyone wanted to come back. It's in the hands of a great creator and a great creative team.
The only thing that saddens me is now, Fraction's already, he's not returning my emails. He's a big shot now. I sent him congratulations, and I don't hear back from him.
We're taping on Matt's birthday.
Should we sing?
I'm not going to say happy birthday. I'll just wish him well on happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Matt.
Absolutely.
Happy birthday.
Jesus Christ.
And I just posted, if I may, I'll cross from Rowan and say I just posted my Word Balloon interview with Matt.
He's everywhere now.
Yeah.
We discovered Matt before.
Discovered penicillin.
When we met Matt Fraction, we had just thawed him out from a block of ice, and he could not read or write.
I remember the clean-shaven Matt Fraction.
Congratulations.
Much more normal than the Matt Fraction that we are now find ourselves seeing at conventions and stuff with creepy eyes.
Congratulations to Matt. He deserves it. He's a very
exactly.
Writer.
And Ariel, that's a gorgeous book.
A heck of a nice guy.
I don't like The Punisher, and I read this book, and I loved it.
It was
the fact that he messed up Stiltman something
awful.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
That's the cool thing. I think, they kept saying, now, this isn't going to be Garth's Punisher. Yeah, we know you all like the violent, very scary Punisher, but I think this Punisher stands up very well on its own.
And if you bought this and liked it, go get Casanova. Yes. Or, you'll like that as well. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Get to know Matt Fraction. If you're just reading
Science,
Iron Fist and Punisher War Journal, that's great, but get to know his other stuff. You won't regret it.
$1.99.
I think I'm gonna try and start bringing back Chris's three favorite lines. We tried that one segment out, but my favorite line from any comic in the last couple of weeks was, "No, I can't die at the hands of cutesy little robots."
It was a tiny little. I love
that. Wasn't the line though.
Oh, there wasn't.
Not
you,
like
you
this
edited it.
Was part of that.
No, well, that was
Matt
whatever.
Fraction's
anyway.
The genius. You're just the podcast.
I just comment. All right.
Entertainment Weekly talked with Buffy creator Joss Whedon about the Buffy series 8 comic books. Since the 7th season of Buffy, the Vampire Slayer, came to a close in 2003, Whedon has built quite a name for himself in the comic book industry, most notably on Marvel Comics' Astonishing X-Men series, along with artistic sensation John Cassaday. Now the director-writer will oversee his most famous creations return to the realm of comics in a new Dark Horse title. The series will debut in 2007 and will be an ongoing title, albeit finite. As Whedon sees the project as a sage spanning about...
Isn't that a saga?
A saga spanning about 25 to 30
issues.
It's called
a typo, John.
Typo.
Right, I'm just guessing it's a saga.
Sage stuffing.
There you go.
So it's parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Yeah.
That's what he sees the project as.
Recipe.
So Whedon, so season 8 for Buffy fans.
I heard they're
going to
repurpose some of the... animated episodes that they were talking about doing for the animated
comic
series that never happened. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then doing that for the comic, and I think it's great. I bet you. I'm sure Jeff Loeb is going to find time to get some work in this. I mean, I don't think it hasn't been announced yet, but given their close relationship, it wouldn't surprise me if he's involved. And maybe they'll have people like Jane Epperson, who used to write for the Buffy series and wrote for the Dark Horse comic book for a while. I mean, I like all the Whedon properties, the comic adaptations. I think Dark Horse did a
the Buffy series was really good.
It was a very fun series, and I love IDW's Angel stuff and Spike stuff. I think that's been great, too. And, yeah, these are great characters. I think they should keep going.
One other, a couple other notes I just wanted to mention was that he is going to write the first four issues and then oversee various writers working on it from there.
Yeah.
And also, he said,
like he did with
you
the
know,
show.
They're going to be... Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they're going to be picking up right where season 7 left off. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hear the Immortal, who I guess Buffy was dancing around with on in the last season of Angel. I think that's going to figure into the story as well. So he is, I think, it's very much part of canon, so continuity freaks will not be disappointed in this adaptation.
Yeah, it was season 8. They've been talking about this for almost a year now, and as a Buffy fan, I'm really excited about
it. Has everyone read Frey?
Loved Frey.
Frey's really cool. Frey was kind of a Slayer in the Future story.
Yeah, and they even tied... Frey was actually kind of tied into that last season of Buffy.
No question. The Battle Axe and everything.
The Battle Axe was awesome. Yeah, so... And I think that you'll probably see them continue to do tie-ins like that. Whedon is great about adding that stuff.
I just wish that, unfortunately, with IDW... It's so funny. It mirrors what happened on television when Buffy went to UPN, but Angel stayed on the WB, and crossovers were very hard to come by after that. That's too bad that Angel and Spike can't still be part of the story because...
Man, you are hip.
I love... I was a latecomer to Buffy. I didn't watch it until the final season, and I got into Angel the last two seasons and went back and watched everything. And no, I'm a huge Buffy fan. I think that's a great series.
It was a smart show. It was
John.
I'm right there.
There was about a 2-3 year period where it was the best show on TV. No question in my mind.
Was it pre?
I don't know. Westworld was on about the same time.
Must have been before Project Runway.
You might be
Runway.
Fucked in the head on that one. But anyway,
no, must have been before Project Runway. All right.
Well, guys, that will wrap up.
Are you hot?
Our,
are you hot? That was the best show on TV, man.
That will
anything that employs Lorenzo Lamas, you got my vote.
That's the That'll wrap up our news for the week. So we'll move away from the news desk. It is time for Top of the Stack. That's right. It's time for Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listener, know what we, the panel, have been reading for the last week. And Top of the Stack is sponsored by...
The Damned, created by Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt and published by Oni Press. It's the oldest story in the book, right? The rich get richer, while the poor get the bum's rush straight into the gutter. High and mighty gangsters rake in the dough hand over fist. Rival criminal families hit the mattresses, and anyone who gets in the way ends up in the morgue. Open warfare and gangland murders are as common as night and day. But here's what you don't know, wise guy. As powerful as the mobs are, a more sinister force is pulling their leashes, using greed, gluttony, and lust to fuel a much more lucrative trade, human souls. As demons and mortals and half-breeds scratch and claw for their piece of the pie, Eddie, cursed and unable to rest, finds himself caught smack dab in the middle of a sinister web of kidnapping, betrayal, and damnation. It's The Damned, number 1 and 2, available now from OD Press.
And now your top 5.
I was going to say, now back to you, Chris.
All right.
Thank you, Don Pardo.
Thank you.
Yes, pick up The Damned. It's fan-freaking-tastic. All right, Tom, you're usually the first one to go. What was your Top of the Stack?
Mine was Green Lantern number 15 by Jeff Johns and Ivan Reis. If you haven't been reading Green Lantern, I suggest you start. Because it's really good. I'm really starting to see the parallels between what he's doing with Green Lantern and what he did with The Flash, of building up all the characters around Hal Jordan to be worthwhile characters in an overall story. He's building up all the villains. He's building up a huge story around him. It works really great as a single issue, and I think it also will work great as a trade. The art is fantastic. You get a sprinkle. Nice. Yeah. And there's a couple moments where I got geek bumps during the geek bumps during it, where I was like, oh, that is amazing.
I was telling Chris this afternoon, I said, he's becoming one of my favorite artists in comics. He's one of the few artists that I want to see more two-page spreads from, two splash pages, because he just... He's phenomenal.
Didn't he do Superman before this?
Wasn't he? I thought it was Superman Batman, maybe, or something.
Maybe he had an arc on Superman Batman, but I seem to remember him doing Superman.
But, I mean, you get to see him do the current Justice League of America in this issue. Yep. He does Rocket Red. He does
a bunch of Rocket Reds.
He does Crimson, everything. Like Crimson, John's
global
is throwing
Guardians,
John's is throwing everything in the kitchen sink into Green Lantern, and it completely
enormous.
Talk to John about it. It just sounds like he's having a fun time.
Oh yeah, he has said it is his goal to make Hal Jordan cool again, and is having the time of his life, and has hundreds of ideas for stories. He and Van Sciver are working on the Sinestro Corps annual that's coming out.
Oh, that's going to be
amazing. There's a tease of that in the story as well.
Yeah, there was, and it was
and
cool.
And there's so many, there's so many interesting things, like you say, Tom, that are going on. And it is. It's one of those individual issues that is teasing a bunch of upcoming arcs and other stories that are coming up, but it does work on its own as well. And the whole story of why is Hal still a wanted criminal?
He's in the situation he's in because he's Hal Jordan. You know,
yeah. Like, well, that was the thing that I like about it is that they, you know, I thought John's did a great job of bringing Hal back.
Yeah.
But he didn't just like, okay, he's back and now everything's hunky dory and he's back to being Green Lantern.
Yeah.
He's an outsider. He really is. I mean, most people, you know, that even friends and don't trust him. Don't know, you know, don't know if this is just another trick. They're not sure how to deal with him. And he is really an outsider. And even, you know, in the Green Lantern Corps, he's an outsider. In his family. Yeah. I mean, he really is. And it's made for some fascinating storytelling.
The thing I love about it is, and this isn't this issue, but this whole story arc that started last issue, it's the idea that you have someone like Hal Jordan, who's a jet pilot, but he doesn't carry his ring with him. When he flies the jet, because why would he? Because he's the man without fear. You know, like he doesn't have any fear.
Well, that's
a
perfect.
Care.
I mean, a test pilot is a very cocky.
Yeah, he doesn't need the ring. At
right,
this
it's
point.
Like
yeah.
I'm not gonna rely on that. I mean, that's certainly that's
and it gets him into trouble.
Line.
And that's
and it's that line that he keeps every now and then falling off of, because you're right. If it's one thing to be fearless, it's another thing to be arrogant and cocky.
Right.
That's how Parallax,
that's how
kind of came
trouble,
about
yeah.
in
yeah.
the first place, right? So no, I think he's given Hal Jordan a very new purpose, and it's interesting because if anything, it was always Guy that was portrayed as the real arrogant Green Lantern, and Hal was the straight arrow.
Yeah, they lost that at some point with Hal, and I think that sort of Hal doesn't buy insurance. He's the type of guy who doesn't even give a fuck about it. Yeah. He would never buy insurance because he's Hal Jordan. Nothing bad ever happens to him.
Or be a door-to-door toy salesman.
Or drive a fucking truck.
Well, that's what John said. It's like, he had the coolest fucking job being a jet.
He's a fucking
jet
pilot.
Exactly. He's a fighter pilot. He's a test pilot. Is there any other cool risk-taking job?
And door-to-door toy salesman.
Yeah, let's see. There's a big risk. Hey, you want my fake vomit today?
Insurance salesman. He doesn't need insurance.
But they worked that in the story because that was like him trying to please the family, and Jack, I tried your field, and I think that was smart.
The thing that keeps amazing me about Jeff Johns is that every time he takes over one of these characters, it's like, how does he possibly nail it? How does he know these characters and write them so? Because
he's doing
perfectly?
It with Teen Titans too, I think.
Well,
yeah.
I think he's done it with everything.
He just keeps doing it.
Like I asked him, and I think he's the guy. I think he is the unsung hero of why Nightwing is still around at the DCU, because I'm like, what did you say to Dan DiDio? And he's like, Dick Grayson is everyone's best friend. He's like, Dick Grayson is the one hero in the DC universe that if you're down on your luck, that's the guy to go to, and he will always be on your side and is like always there to help out in a cause. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I've never heard any other writer
understand these
that.
Characters better than
he seems to love what he does.
Well, yeah, and also he is a reader. He is around our ages, and so he was reading those same books that we were, and can bring his adult sensibilities and his writing sensibilities and appreciating the essence of what was great about those runs and giving them new and more interesting, informative spins.
Absolutely.
All hail Jeff Johns.
Oh, yeah. He's the man. He certainly is the man when it comes to Green Lantern.
Jeff. All right, Sal, how about you?
My top of the stack
I know what it is, you bastard.
The Immortal Iron
you
Fist.
Bastard.
I pulled a on Chris' day, we were talking about what was going to be our top of the stack, and I knew that he was going to pick this book, so I shotgunned him before he could say it.
I sent David Press an email saying I claimed that you were going to pick that. You were 2 days ago.
Oh, that's so good. But I don't want that to shortchange what I'll be talking about in a couple
of
minutes, because it was absolutely
awesome, fantastic.
Anyway, Immortal Iron Fist number one, written by Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction, with pencils by
David Aja.
David Aja and
Aja?
I thought it was Asia, but maybe it is Asia.
Is it Power Station?
And colors by Hollingsworth. Good God. You know, what can I say about, I don't know, maybe
Iron
it's
just... Iron Fist is back, baby.
Yeah, Iron Fist is back. You know, the interesting thing about this, I mean, I'm like you, John, I'm an old Iron Fist fan, one of my favorite characters of all time. I couldn't wait for them to bring him back. But I love what Brubaker and Fraction have decided to do with the character, really expand on sort of the mythology of the Iron Fist, and that character's been around for more than just Danny Rand. But at the same time, I think they're really sort of expanding on Danny Rand, and they're reintroducing him into the universe. And at the same time, they're kind of explaining why he hasn't really been around for a long time. And they're doing it in an intelligent way. They're saying, you know, Danny sort of fell off the map and was a little bit conflicted about who he was, and now he seems to have a better idea of what type of person he wants to be, and that's why he's back, and that's why we see him now. And so I really appreciated that. I really thought that was you know, intelligent and smart, and a good way to bring a character back in instead of just plopping him in, you know, some sort of crazy...
As someone who's never read Iron Fist before on any level, and I read this book, and I was never turned off and thought, oh... God, there's so much Iron Fist history or anything. I was actually really interested enough to, like, go to Wikipedia and look up Iron Fist.
Very accessible. Like, yeah. A very accessible first issue.
They quickly, I mean, recap but his history. And, yeah, you know what I mean? They all worked in the context of the story. They, you know, they really did it in a way that it was, you know, explained just enough for anybody to understand the character, but... Also, it propelled the story forward. Yeah. It wasn't, absolutely. You know, it wasn't.
They didn't spoon feed you it too.
Right.
And
right.
What's nice, you didn't need the lead up, but in Daredevil, it's been leading into this series. If you picked up the Civil War, Choosing Sides, there was a great Iron Fist little six page story.
Yeah, preview. Yeah, prequel.
A prequel. And
I loved it. I've never read any Iron Fist. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's. But it did a great job of using those things to lead you into this, but you still didn't have to have read those.
I know nothing about Iron Fist.
The great thing, too.
Yeah, I liked it.
The great thing, too, about...
I repeat, I know nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very rare that I know nothing about
a character.
Yeah, but I know nothing about him. I loved it.
I also want to mention the art. His art is very David Lark-ish.
Michael Arkridge.
Michael Arkridge. And, but with his own style, I thought he had a real... almost sort of surreal feel in certain panels, and
it's like Maleev too.
Yeah, it's got some Maleev in it. It has, you know, and there were certain panels that had me thinking about Steranko.
Sure.
And certain, you know what I mean? Just sort of had that.
Well,
that
you were telling
wonky.
Me, you pointed out a couple specific panels and said, doesn't this evoke old Iron Fist? And I'm like, yeah, those are John Byrne.
John Byrne. There's some John Byrne Iron Fist homage. Looking, you know, there's a lot of that in there. So obviously, someone who's done their history.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, a very talented artist.
Well, we all talked to both Brubaker and Fraction.
Yeah.
And I just posted my Fraction conversation. We did it a couple months ago. And he said, and I'm glad he said it, and it's self evident in this first issue, that Iron Fist as a character. Encompasses at least 9 different pulp, you know, classic characters or iconic pulp traits.
He's everything.
He really is. And he comes from that generation of the Bronze Age of Marvel characters where all these writers were heavily influenced by pulp ideas. And Iron Fist is martial arts meets Lost Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the easiest, you know, shorthand to do if you know the Lost Horizon story, Shangri-La and everything. I think it's a great story, and I like the idea of showing these other previous Iron Fists and also some previous Iron Fists that have a closer family connection to Danny Rand, which is a new wrinkle, and it's a welcome wrinkle to the story. And again, I think
That's what made me go look. I was like, is this something we've seen before? Because, I mean, my curiosity was piqued.
Sure.
By the way it was written, I was like, I want to know more about this
character based on this. It's certainly not the same Iron Fist or the same Danny Rand that we've seen before. As much as I enjoyed the Heroes for Hire stuff and the Power Man and Iron Fist stuff, this is a much more serious character.
He's his own man.
Yeah. Yeah,
which
absolutely. And that's what they really tried to portray in this, is that, you know, he's evolved
He and Luke are a great team.
Yeah. Sure.
And they're a fun team, and I enjoy their stuff. But I was one of those Iron Fist solo book readers before they put him with Power Man.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was fine, and I enjoyed the improvement of having Power Man around all the time, but I missed my solo Iron Fist stories. And also, God, how many good mainstream martial arts books are there? God, I was so rooting for DC with Richard Dragon to do the right thing. And I think Chuck Dixon had some good ideas, but it just didn't work in those 12 issues.
Out,
I think Brubaker and Fraction, they love the character. They love the they love the espionage setup that I think they're going to be leading to. And
are they going to have pages about how to kick someone? Before I don't want to take this over your pick, but it's the one page that that really got me interested in the character is when he was in the boardroom, like, and he was like, "Oh, I'm not going to do that." And the guy who runs his business pretty much like, "Are you stupid?" You know, like, and I'm like, "Yeah."
Really smacks him upside the head. Yeah. And I was
like, "Wow, that's
you,
really good. Like, are you stupid? Like, who do you think you are to like pick and choose?" Where you're going to decide that you're going to be
spending your money.
Yeah, on, like, I think that's a perfect example of what Fraction and Brubaker are trying to do in making Danny his own person, because that's not really something we'd ever seen before from that character. Danny was just sort of...
Well, he was rich, but...
But
you're right, he never used
it. It was almost ancillary. It was just there. He never had any effect.
He was never a Tony Stark. Yeah,
right.
He was never really a player using his money like Wayne Enterprises or Stark Industries.
It was just there. It was just part of his character, but it wasn't really used in a...
And that intrigued me the most.
Have you guys mentioned the big robot yet?
The Mechagorgon was... And I know that was all Fraction. I mean, you know that was all Fraction. Nobody else. And that was the cool. That was very cool. Yeah, yeah. That was so. I really
that's like
enjoyed
we're putting
it.
Like the big ass robot in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was great.
I thought it was really good.
Well, I guess to build on that, it's another Ed Brubaker week because mine is Captain America 24, and when I've been on before to talk about Top of the Stack, I know I've brought up Captain America before.
Really?
What a great... I know. Two years into the run, it's still a great series. It's still really entertaining. They're still building...
Has it been 2 years?
It's been on 24, so yeah. Do the math.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even... Yeah,
and actually,
right.
I guess with delays, it's probably been a little bit more than
longer,
2 years.
Yeah.
But, man, Mike Perkins is back on, and whether it's he or Epting doing the book, I think it's gorgeous art. I love what the role of S.H.I.E.L.D., both in Civil War and in Captain America. And this is a Civil War tie-in. And some people complained about that, and I was even reading on Brian Bendis' board.
See, I loved it.
That they were very mad that the cover was so misleading because it featured a lot of heroes that aren't actually in the book. I think it was a great story that was still very much a Captain America story, but it's Captain America dealing with some of the ancillary issues of Civil War, the change in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s command, Maria Hill now running things, Nick Fury underground, and how he is able to still contact the few people that he can still trust. And you even get a moment where Sharon Carter is talking to Nick Fury in a very creative way.
I figure out communications.
I don't want to tip it. But he even says, I can't get to Dum Dum Duggan because of the way Maria Hill is watching him all the time.
Right.
And that's the thing, because it's like, God, you'd think if there's one guy that would be out there probably trying to do everything, it would be Dum Dum. Well, obviously everybody in S.H.I.E.L.D. is aware of that. So, you know, Duggan's hands are tied.
The first time, and Sal and I talked about this book over lunch today, this and Iron Fist was...
While you were splitting that half sandwich?
Yeah,
splitting an
enchilada.
Sitting on the curb.
But I mentioned to him, it's one of the first times in forever... hearing a Nick Fury that felt like the old Steranko Nick Fury, with just kind of a little bit of not campy dialogue, but just
old
that,
man.
Yeah.
Well, he's a guy of the '40s, you know.
And it was, you don't hear that voice from him the way a lot of writers write him. He's that gruff, you know, general. And Brubaker seems to really embrace that 60s era Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. dialogue from him, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think he's really focusing on that Steranko era cast of characters and the books that followed too, when Gene Colan was drawing the book, and it's funny, I just bought that Essentials. The latest Captain America Essentials, which really is the period, the post-Steranko period. And, you know, where Fury and Sharon Carter and S.H.I.E.L.D. in general was really Cap supporting cast. It's an important part of his life. This builds on the last two issues as well, where we saw what the Winter Soldier is doing during Civil War. And now this was kind of Sharon as well, kind of, and I guess the previous issue.
And that's one of the things I've loved about this series is that, it's not like he's writing six issues and there's your story all written, you know, all tied up in a nice little bow and it's all done. None of these stories have ended. There's been some closure, you know, from time to time, but he keeps going from, you know, from one sort of situation to another, and you're waiting for the, you know, sooner or later, you know, the Winter Soldier is going to be back involved. Sooner or later, you know, Red Skull is going to be back involved. And then, but he keeps building on it, too. It's like he keeps, you know, it's like, yeah, it's well, really taking off in such a nice web.
Just like Tom was saying about the Green Lantern issue, yeah, this is a middle chapter, but it really does kind of work. And I don't feel like I'm, you know, how some of those middle chapters in a six-issue arc can kind of feel like an empty chapter.
Right.
Like, well, gee, no, not a lot really happened here. Yeah. I was thoroughly entertained.
There's tons of stuff.
It's tons of overlapping story arcs. Yeah. And not going to give away the last page, but if you're an old-school Cap fan, boy, does Brubaker just do such a great job of bringing so many of those elements back.
Well, in 25, I remember Ed telling me this, that 25... the next issue of Cap takes place, and it might be a couple months because it literally, he says, starts 10 minutes after whatever happens in Civil War 7. So hold on to your hats, kids, because this is the calm before the storm. And I think a lot of shit's going to start coming down.
It was interesting that it was such a Civil War. You know, I mean, when I picked it up, I'm like, I didn't even realize it was Captain America when I got it this week. I'm like, where's my Cap? And then I saw, oh, that's Cap. It's the big Civil War banner, you know, across the bottom of it and everything. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, technically, was it a Civil War crossover? There wasn't a whole lot of Civil War to do with it, but that didn't bother me at all. In fact,
I think SHIELD is a big part, though. They're the police of Civil War, and I think they're coming after Captain America. So I do think it is a tie-in.
I think people have just gotten so used now to this Civil War. It's like all the tie-ins have had. You've had some pretty big plot points in some you know, crossover issues that aren't happening. You don't even know about in the main title and stuff. So I think people are kind of expecting that from anything that says Civil War on it. You expect, you know, these, you know, huge events, you know, to cross over in them. But it didn't bother me at all. In fact, I remember when Civil War first came about, you know, that was the thing, like with House of M, the whole, you know, what Brubaker did with the House of M issue of Captain America. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to completely stop his story and restart it.
Right.
And I'm glad he didn't have to do that with this because, you know,
it works really nicely.
I still like that. That was one of the issues.
I didn't mind the issue.
It was weird to be reading it and then be like...
Well, it broke away from what Brubaker was doing
exactly.
in the book.
And that's
and
what
it was so early in the run.
Right.
It was like issue 10.
Eight.
Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to see that now. You know, I'm much happier with what happened than something like that.
I think he was able to fix it by having that London story come in, and he could even justify that in saying, hey, Cap freaked out about what's happening with Civil War, so he ducked away and went to London and had that little adventure with Spitfire and Union Jack.
Well, I kind of just assumed that happened a little bit before, you know, it was sort of the timeline was off a bit, but... Yeah, I mean, it works. It works either way.
I don't even think about that stuff, guys.
it's been a great...
All right,
Chris, you have a fantastic book in front of you.
He does have a great book.
All right, you mainstream horror.
Is that book here in the store, by the way?
Sold out.
That book.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. It is Hip Flask, Mystery City, and this is Richard Starkings, baby, I think. Does he do anything else besides Hip Flask?
Well, he did those. Didn't he do that? Or no, that was Richard Morgan who did the Black Widow stuff. But Richard Starkings,
Elephant Man and
isn't he a mystery? I think he is a mystery writer. Isn't he a mystery writer?
I don't know because he is a heck of a comic writer and
he makes fonts.
Hip Flask is put out by Comic Craft and the retail. You know, I always do these like really expensive books. You know, I can't review a book. This book's totally worth it.
$4.99.
And what I was saying to you, you read a lot of books and they seem very disposable. This one, man, two pages into it, I was like, this is an outstanding comic. First of all, it is an extremely dense story. I'm a sucker for anything that's like Blade Runner or street level crime or mob stuff.
Yeah.
And this has everything. It's future tech. It's bioengineering, and there's a great murder mystery. And you know, you've got.
Can I ask you something?
Uh-huh.
Did you pick up Elephant Man number 0?
Yes.
That is a reissue of this Hip Flask series is like a 5-part issue, which is this is the third part.
Okay.
And that 0 is a reprint of the first issue.
Okay. Oh, All right.
Yeah. Have you read The Zero?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great because it all fits in, and you don't need to read it in any particular order to completely make sense.
So is it a shared universe, or is it all...
Yeah, it's a shared universe, and it all makes complete sense.
Hip Flask is an Elephant Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
It all makes complete sense. I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify that for people that were listening.
No, because I know that you were a fan of this. Yeah. One of the things I love graphically in this, and I've always wondered why people don't play around with it, is all of the word balloons are ghosted, so you can see the artwork beneath them. And I think that's a great effect, and I've suggested that to people in the past and always kind of wondered why.
I've never heard you say that before.
Oh, hush. No, I love that effect, and I think it kind of adds to the overall feel of the book.
Well, we can expect nothing less from the fine folks at Comicraft.
Yes.
Creators of Blam... I don't know.
Blambot?
No, I don't know. Blam Font.
Okay.
Yeah.
They make all the fonts.
What about Elephant Man? Interests you so much, Chris?
No, that's not Eliopoulos' company, is it?
No.
No.
Okay.
I think one of the neat things about Elephant Man or Hip Flask is that you take these very non-human characters, and because you get their point of view, you focus on what is human about them, and you really kind of have to step back and you focus on the humanity of the book.
Black Sad?
No.
Black Sad is very similar, and it's where he used animals in a noir.
Well, it also reminds me a little bit of the really early Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Sure, where the grittier ones.
Yeah, very gritty early ones.
It's the people in these books are the least human,
or humane,
yeah. And it's the Elephant Men that really show the most humanity. It's a beautiful book.
Truly ironic, wouldn't you say, Caters?
It's
indeed.
There's a lot of great humor in there. There's a scene whenever he walks up to the guy who's the half camel half man in the bar, and I'm like, Joe? That's Joe Camel.
Of course, he calls him Joe.
Yeah, and he calls him Joe. So there's some funny moments in there. It's an extremely dense story. There's a lot going on. You have multiple storylines going on, and you know that they're all going to intersect, and it's just a gorgeous book.
One of the great things about Elephant Men is that, to me, it's established itself as a brand where you don't need to read them in order to like them. Every single issue of Elephant Men that I've read, while it all ties in together, you could read by itself and still very much enjoy it. What's going on within that story, and they've done a fantastic job. The art is always just beautiful. The writing's always very right on spot.
Is there a trade yet, or is it still in its?
I think
they're coming out
with one soon.
Did they just come out with one, or is it coming out soon?
I think it's coming. They have 5 issues right now, so I assume it's going to come out after their 6th.
Okay.
Because they just came out with the Zero issue, which is a reprint of the very first. Yeah, the very
first.
Well,
I tell you, if you came up with a checklist of things that make a great comic book, it's a great art, great dialogue, great plot, inventive, whatever, and you came up with that list, this would have almost every one of them. It's probably the most flawed.
This would have 3 of them.
It's probably the most flawless book that I've read in God knows
that's
how long.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's really cool. I am waiting for the trade. It looked like a very interesting concept.
It's very cool. All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap up our top of the stack reviews and recommendations. That means it's time to wind the show down.
To the end.
All right, before we get to our end announcements, I do want to say a few words about our last episode. There were a couple unfortunate comments made during the episode, and our reaction to those comments were equally unfortunate. I'm aware that the line of good taste was stepped over, and as the host of Around Comics, I want to personally apologize to our listeners, and in particular, any listeners that were offended. It is never our intent to be hurtful or harmful, and while I believe that there was no malicious intent behind any of the comments, it does not excuse them. At this point, I'm going to consider the issue closed, but if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to me at chris@aroundcomics.com. I will get back to you and discuss any of your concerns with you. But thank you for your understanding and your continued listenership of Around Comics. All right, Long Box of Love. Remember that your Around Comics experience isn't complete until you've read this week's Long Box of Love. Each Thursday episode of Around Comics has a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic by Brian Bowles. Check it out every Thursday at www.aroundcomics.com.
And while you're doing that, you should also check out the Podtrack, you know? Hang around the site and fill out our listener survey. It lets us know who we're talking to and how we can make Around Comics a better show. It only takes a few minutes. And we are also proud members of the Comic Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of the best comic podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
Thank you, Tom. I kind of dropped the ball there. Just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forum at www.aroundcomics.com. You can go there and help us out with things like the Listener LCS Challenge. You can also link up to Podcast Alley and give us a vote. Now, the iTunes reviews, I don't want to prod you guys along, but we've been sitting
we've
on,
been
65
parked on 65
forever.
Guys.
So whoever gets us to 70, I'll send you one of Tom's quarter books in the mail. So
I'll make sure it's a 100-pager.
There you go. I'd like to thank InStockTrades.com and the New York Comic Con for sponsoring today's episode. Everyone have a fantastic couple days. We'll be back again on Thursday with another new episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in...
And around comics.
Confused script.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.